Welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the dilettante, box-seated, beculped world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me, as always, is Ben. Hello,
hi, Ben.
I decided the intros have gotten a little Byzantine recently, and so just went with the simple one as like a palate cleanser. Next week, we'll be back to bits and skits and fun stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just, you know, just laid back. A little more casual this time.
Yeah, I would have appreciated it. Heads up. I was prepared for a
I can never please you, Ben. It's like if I do a bit, you're unhappy about Benjamin.
This is how this works, Mac.
This week we're taking a look at season 2, episode 3, The Most Crucial Game. This episode marks the triumphant return of my personal favorite, the man who puts the culp in culprit, Mr. Robert Culp.
The man who puts the culp in culpability.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty much the same thing.
Same thing. This is Robert Culp's second appearance, playing the general manager of a pro football team who murders the team's rich kid owner. Playing the party kid fuckboy owner is veteran character actor Dean Stockwell, best known for his co-starring role on Quantum Leap as Al, an hologram that only Dr. Beckett could see and hear. This is Dean Stockwell's first appearance on Columbo, but it will not be his last. He also appears in the season 4 episode Troubled Waters, along with future multi-guest Robert Vaughn, who, he's in a couple. That's where Columbo solves a murder on a cruise ship.
Ooh, does Vaughn come in before?
No, he comes in later.
Okay. No, I mean, like, does he guest on the show before that episode?
No, that's his first appearance.
Okay.
Robert Vaughn and Robert Culp have both passed on, but they leave behind them a legacy of guys from shows in the 60s named Robert that I sometimes have trouble keeping straight in my head.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So.
Robert Culp.
He's back.
He is so good.
He's wearing.
Mac,
I understand. He's wearing the same suits.
I understand why he's a favorite. Is that first one a suit that was in the other one?
No, I think just the one at the finale.
Yeah. Because he's wearing the vest and the pants from the three-piece.
Yep.
From last time, like the nail head.
Yeah.
But yeah,
maybe the green one he's wearing when he's in the box at the beginning.
I'm just gonna go right into that because
sure, let's get to it. Let's get it out of the way.
It's 1972,
yep.
And 1972 is all over Robert Culp.
In the best way possible.
No, absolutely.
Of all the people who got clothing. Who got 1970s in this episode?
Okay.
He probably is the best.
Yeah, one. Listen. So there's just a quick aside. There is I guess it's a Twitch channel, but it's also on Amazon Prime as a subset of like the streaming videos and whatever called Buzzer.
Okay.
BUZZR, and it's just like old terrifying game shows.
Okay. And sure.
And one of them is called Tattletale, and it's like celebrity couples
being
asked questions and stuff. And Robert Culp is on some of those episodes.
Oh, really?
And oh, yeah. He is, man, 70s.
Is he looking good?
Dude, Robert Culp is real hot.
He's a handsome fella. He has a terrible mustache.
Oh, yeah. No, the mustache is awful.
It's really bad.
But he doesn't have that. He didn't have the mustache last time, and he doesn't have the mustache when he's on Tattletale.
Yeah. So I think this might be the only, I think of the three, this might be the only appearance of a mustachioed Robert Culp.
Yeah.
And it's not a good look for him.
No, it doesn't work. It doesn't work well.
Especially because it's like, it's got kind of, it's like an almost, what do you call that? Like the Lemmy from Motorhead, that
handlebars?
Sort of handlebar,
yeah.
But it like just has the start of a handlebar.
Yeah, it's
so
like,
it comes below the lip and then comes to about like mid jaw and then just stops.
Right. So they're not really handlebars so much.
It's not
they're
great.
Just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere between that and like a proper Magnum mustache, I guess.
Yes. It's a very 1970s look.
But anyway, so that suit is. It's like a brown suit and all the buttons are flapped. All the pockets, excuse me, are flapped, including the breast pocket, and they all are buttoned, which is a very 70s kind of look. And it's got that same kind of sculpting. And then
this is the one from the beginning or this
from
is
the beginning?
The, okay.
Because he wears it later in the episode as well. And that's when you notice that it's an action back, which is like one of my favorite things. It's the bellows on the sides of the back.
And that was to give you more freedom of movement?
Yeah. It's like half belted in the back, and it's got
it's called an action back.
I know. Isn't it great?
Because the 70s, you had to be ready. If you were wearing a suit, you had to be ready to fight like ninjas
or
at
fuck.
Any time. What? In a suit?
I mean, it was the 70s, right?
All right. I guess so.
Hey, and in fairness, he does, like, we get to see him shirtless.
Yes, there's a little bit of shirtless Robert Culp when he's changing into his murder outfit.
That's right.
Which
the important murder outfit. And let's take note, he is wearing his pants at the natural waist, which is like just below the navel.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
The 1970s.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah.
So
it's a style I like actually when it comes to trouser.
Sure. Have we gotten your clothing out of the way for at least a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got the biggest chunk of it.
Do we scratch the itch?
Yeah.
There's like a meter that it's actually people who've never met Ben don't know that there is actually a physical meter that appears above his head when we don't talk about clothing for long enough, and eventually it hits red, and he just starts telling me about vented things.
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, Mac just humors me. He just smiles and nods, and then he goes, "Have you seen my dog Bear? Bear is very cute.
Bear's great."
Yeah.
Not here today. Not present for this recording. For those, you know, the Bear fans following along at home.
For the Bear fans who are patiently listening for the tap 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 of
the
his
clicking
nails.
of his heels or him licking up some water in the corner. Not here. Sorry.
Well, maybe next time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think
Yeah, let's do the run through of the episode so people know what we're talking about. Pretty complicated murder in this one.
It is actually.
Yeah.
I like the complexity of it, even if it's a little. I mean, there are some neat points where it's like, okay, yeah, he thought about that a little bit. That's good. Okay, he thought about that. Maybe didn't think about that part.
The motive is this young guy, this Dean Stockwell character.
Yeah. So Dean Stockwell plays Eric Wagner, who is the son of a former like sports magnate.
Well, the guy who owns the football team that sort of play the Rockets.
The LA Rockets football team.
Which is,
insert stock footage.
But it is actually filmed in Memorial Stadium, the actual football stadium
in
LA.
I just don't know who's actually playing because I don't know teams from the 70s.
I have no idea. Yeah. Possibly the LA, was it LA Rams now? I don't know. No. Here's the thing. We don't know about sports.
Yeah, we don't know anything about sports.
We don't know anything about
sports. If you want sports talk, SB Nation, I guess.
Yeah.
They make pretty cool videos.
Yeah.
We don't know anything about sports.
We don't know anything about sports.
Anyway, so
his
football team.
He's the son of the magnate that the we learn later that the father wanted this kid to become a football star, but he didn't have any aptitude for it, so he became sort of a burnout playboy.
Can you imagine Al as a football player?
Not so much.
Yeah, no.
He's married, but he cheats on his wife.
Yeah.
He's
sowing his wild oats, as someone refers to it, which is, you know, the classiest way of glossing over infidelity.
Yeah.
Nice work there.
I think he also really doesn't seem to have any interest in growing the business, which is what...
Okay, hold on. Let's roll back just a little bit. I know that we're doing plot, but when they introduce him, when we first see him on screen, he is answering a phone from his bed with the sheets over his head. He is shirtless when he finally takes that off, of course, because he's in bed. The sheets are black satin sheets.
They are black satin sheets.
Like,
and he does also keep his phone inside the desk, the nightstand. Jesus Christ, the nightstand drawer, like he's it closed inside there to not bother him,
which is fair enough, you know, I guess when you're doing whatever
that is strewn with lingerie.
I mean, yeah, they do their damnedest in set dressing to make it clear that he is just
he's a party boy.
He is a party boy who clearly does not have any interest in work.
If you own black satin sheets, you definitely are cheating on your wife.
Is that how that works?
I think that's how it works.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, look, if there's someone out there who owns black satin sheets that's not cheating on their wife, please write in.
Yeah.
Let me know.
Yeah. Write Mac. Don't write me. I don't want to be in the middle of that.
I need proof. I need proof of your non-infidelity.
Mm.
So, notarized letter.
Okay.
Hmm. No? Okay.
Nope. My brain went to bad places because I started thinking about those sheets and then it got really dark. So moving on.
I can't imagine. They must be hell to clean satin sheets.
Yeah, I don't.
It doesn't seem.
I don't understand.
No.
I mean, I don't. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, anyway, so.
At least Robert, he wasn't in a waterbed?
Well, we don't technically know that.
Well, it didn't,
he didn't really move around
or sound like a waterbed.
Well, he didn't move enough to really give us the.
No,
the...
he pulled the head off. He pulled his head out from under the sheets. That would have been enough for the bed to.
All right. Well, you're the waterbed expert, so I trust you in this one. Robert Culp is going to murder this guy so that he can
murder him.
He's going to get more control of the business because he.
Because he has to wrangle this.
The wife
idiot.
of Dean Stockwell's character likes him a lot more than this. This rich idiot,
right?
So he's gonna murder him, but to do so he needs to have an alibi. So in order to do so, he is in the private box watching a football game between the Rockets and the other team, which I don't remember them ever saying.
I don't know if
they may have at one point.
I don't think they acknowledged
it doesn't
because
matter.
It's clear that everyone only cares about the Rockets doing well.
Yeah, they're all wearing.
It is LA, and it's theoretically LA's, you know, fantasy football team.
They're all wearing jerseys, but those jerseys don't have any logos on them. Like, they're different colors, but they don't actually have any logos on them.
Yeah, that's kind of not how it works these days.
I think at one point, if you there during the stock footage of an actual game, you can see like the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, there's an end design in the end zone for the Chiefs.
Oh,
and
that
they are wearing the same, and one of the teams is wearing the same colors as the Chiefs, but they're not the Chiefs.
Right. I think that might actually be the colors they picked for the Rockets, just because that's probably
the
stock footage
that
they had.
That. That makes sense.
But yeah, so he's in the owner's booth.
He's in the owner's box.
And
he dismisses the attendant who's normally there.
Yeah, he heavily tips the attendant and sends him off.
Has him lock the door so no one can come in.
Yeah. Then he calls the head coach to berate him
and tell him that he wants him to come up and see him
at halftime because he's gonna tell him how to do his job basically and then after that phone call he changes
into an ice cream man costume
like a vendor outfit
like
the classic sort of like stand vendor with the popcorn peanuts in the paper bags.
Yeah,
he's
got a paper hat on. He's
dark sunglasses.
Right, and he just walks out.
Yep, strolls out in the middle of the
national anthem
while everyone, including the other vendors, are standing and, you know.
Yeah, you would maybe think that was a little weird, but you wouldn't necessarily notice.
Right, walks out, gets into an ice cream truck.
Yep.
Drives off to, you know, somewhere in idyllic LA County, which I assume is just a richer part of LA County somewhere.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know. Then calls Eric on a payphone with a little handheld radio behind him, so it sounds like he's still at the game.
Yep. He's like he says, I'm sorry, I guess I got the radio on a little loud to Eric.
Yep.
And then, but he's actually like right around the corner.
Yeah.
So as soon as he hangs up the phone, he just rushes over, grabs a block of ice from the ice cream truck.
That's the bit
driving.
I like.
This is the very clever part. And then comes over and hits him in the head with the block of ice so that he passes out. And he passes out and falls into the pool because he's been swimming in the pool.
Right.
Robert Culp's character made a big point of telling him to go like sober up by swimming around in the pool
because
they're supposed to go on a flight
to Montreal to buy a hockey team.
Right.
Because of course you have to go to Canada to buy a hockey team.
The only place that they make them.
Yep.
That's where they manufacture hockey teams.
Yeah, in Montreal.
So when they come off the assembly line, you want to be there.
Yeah.
The thing is, you have to imprint on a hockey team. Because, you know, like a hockey team will only follow you if you imprint on them when they're like new.
Well, I mean, you heard what Al said, right?
Yeah.
Hockey's for penguins.
That's right. And hockey's...
And much like birds, you have to make sure you're there for the imprint.
That's right. Yeah. It's like Jurassic Park, you know?
Yeah.
You just make sure you're there and then you can cradle them and then, you know...
And then they don't murder you.
Exactly. It worked for Hammond.
Yeah.
I mean, he died in, you know, his bed in England or wherever. I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't know.
World 2.
Under a mosquito nest or something?
He's not in the movies anymore. It's fine.
Yeah, it's It's all right. We don't need to talk about those movies.
No, let's talk about them.
No, please.
Welcome to our new thing. It's
Jurassic World. How much do we? I don't know. I haven't seen it. Anyway.
It's fine.
So he bludgeons him.
He bludgeons him with ice.
And then chucks the ice into the pool
so that it'll melt.
Right. Then sprays the deck to try and hide his footprints. He's like, oh, I see my footprints in water there. That's bad.
When he stepped down to hit him, he stepped into the pool. Because there's a little actual kind of staircase down into the pool.
Yeah, which is a neat feature.
Yep.
But anyway, and then he heads back and then he changes back in. And then the coach comes in and he's all, he's like totally chill, which is pretty out of character.
Yeah, he runs all the way. He gets all the way back. And at first it seems like maybe he didn't make it back in time, but he did. He's in there. In the bathroom.
Yep.
And he comes out and says, oh, I guess you did okay. And then the coach is like, well, all right, I'll leave. And
he's like, that's right, I did. Don't tell me how to do my job.
Yep.
While he's smoking that big old stogie.
So he's done it. The perfect murder, right?
Not really.
No.
It's very convoluted.
The reason he went to all this trouble with driving and using the radio and all that is because it's later revealed that the lawyer for the family, this older, bald character actor. Did you write his name down? Because I don't remember.
Walter Connell, I think. Connell. Yeah.
Something like that, yes.
Walter, anyway. Walter. Fucking Walter.
It's Walter Canal. Because when I heard it first, I thought he said Guadalcanal.
Oh, okay. It's like Walter Canal.
Walter
Canal.
It's Walter Canal, the lawyer for the family, the owner family.
Who is
a family friend of the father. And also, this actor has the weirdest lisp, right?
Yeah.
It's a very strange sort of speech impediment.
Yeah, he's got, it's very genteel, I would say.
Yes.
It's not unpleasant. It kind of works very well for this character. And
yeah, I think that the 70s 70s character actor, and you see that too from the coach, who's also a recurring actor. He's been in previous ones. I can't remember exactly, but he was
I
also
don't remember,
he
but
also
yeah,
played
he's recognizable.
He was the murder victim in the Roddy McDowall episode.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh okay.
Yeah, but he also has this incredibly marble mouth.
Yep.
Sort of thing, like he's telling a story. He's like, "Well, I told him that he would never grow up to a man." And that's his whole thing. The 70s were really the heyday of the mush mouthed, ugly character actor.
Yeah, the heyday of what did that dude just say?
what did that aged grandpa made of patent leather just say at me?
Right. Are there subtitles on? No, I guess we just okay. Sure. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's revealed that Walter had tapped the phones in an effort to demonstrate to the Wagners that
to the wife that Eric
wife
has cheating on him.
Not only that Eric was cheating on her, but that Paul, which
was
is to
a
say
bad,
Robert
was,
Culp, was a bad influence on him, which is to say that was, actively encouraging his baser impulses,
which is borne out because that at one point on one of the calls when they're listening to it later, which is the first call, the first thing that happens in the movie,
Eric's hey, that chick that you hooked me up with, it turns out she showed up along with her sister.
And then it's great because they're listening to it later, and there's this really weird moment where
watching Robert Culp's face,
Culp is it took me a minute to connect to the word chick. And it's does that mean?
It took me a minute to bullshit my way out of this.
So he claims that he put him on to a employment agency, and then who knows?
Yeah, right. That Eric was trying to secretly find a mate as a surprise to his wife. That's not how
that
works.
Rich people aren't like us, man. Who knows?
I'm pretty sure that's... okay, hold on. I think when it comes to rich people, I just have a hard time seeing someone who it's
it would certainly be very out of character for this guy.
Oh, for
to
sure.
To be thoughtful. To
I mean,
his
let's
wife.
Yeah, when he was in the pool, he's wearing a tiki head around his neck. It's so awful.
It's bad.
It's real bad. And I guess that's part of the he's like a hip.
He also dives into the pool wearing sunglasses and a little cigarillo.
Right.
She immediately like realizes, throws it out.
Yeah. That whole thing is so ridiculous. It's like,
It's also, it is weird, like having seen so much Quantum Leap to see Dean Stockwell.
Dean Stockwell.
A young, pretty good looking Dean Stockwell, like a handsome young guy. Still with those huge eyebrows. Those very like, dark, distinct eyebrows. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was, yeah, he was.
It was unmistakably him and kind of playing the same kind of character as Al, like just kind of a weirdo creep.
Yep.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, just not borne out across how many episodes was Quantum Leap?
97,
yeah,
I believe.
That's
a lot of time. I was looking at this earlier this morning as I was preparing.
That's a lot of time to figure out just how creepy Al is.
He's very creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he like walks in. Never mind. We don't want to talk
about that. Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah. That's for our sister podcast. A Quantum of Solipus? No. Nope. I swung so hard at that one, and it just...
I'm really glad you did, though, because I was trying to think of something, too, and
it just didn't work.
Yeah.
The point of the phone taps being revealed is that because he made that call... with the radio, it has a record, and then it sounds like he called from the booth.
Right. It's a faked alibi.
Right. And later it's revealed that he couldn't have been from the booth because there's a clock in the booth. And
that goes off and is very noticeable when it goes off.
Exactly. And Columbo figures that out from...
Right. And so that's like, that's the catch moment.
And there are clues leading up to that.
Oh, yeah.
There are a couple times when he's in the box and the clock makes a noise of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
So it is something
that's laid out there. It's just not, they don't like hammer on it. But in fairness, they usually, I've never gotten the impression that they super hammer on the point.
They have sometimes, like the conductor, the John Cassavetes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the flower was incredibly telegraphed.
Right.
So.
But yeah, that one was a little weird.
But this one was not in that same way, so.
Yeah. But I think, I don't know, maybe they just didn't feel like it's necessary because Robert Culp was, I mean.
It's so good. He's so good.
And he must have been like a real heartthrob for the era.
So
to have him on screen just meant nobody's paying attention to anything but Robert.
Yeah. He was a handsome leading man type.
Very yelly.
Oh, yeah. Very angry. Like this is, he's much less restrained than in the previous one. He's immediately hostile towards Columbo. Columbo follows him to the airport because he's.
Oh, I love that. Oh my God.
There's a scene where he goes to pick up the wife. And, before that he's making a call. We later learn that call is to, sex worker, a prostitute named, I don't know her name, but she's played by Valerie Harper, who is Rhoda.
Yeah.
On the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and also Rhoda, the show,
there you go.
Her own show. Uh-huh.
Who's really good
she's
in
really
the very
good.
Little time she's on
She's
screen.
On, yeah, maybe yeah. 2 or 3 minutes total.
There's that lovely moment where they're getting into, and she gets kind of heated because Columbo's kind of putting the pressure on her, and then she drops the sort of studied accent that she uses.
She turns out she's Hungarian or something like that.
Right.
And, it turns out that she was the one who planted the bugs, and that's how he knew that they were there, and that's how he sort of came together.
Right, because Columbo hears like a sort of frequency interference from the bugs and the radio, stereo,
which is playing like Vivaldi or some nonsense.
And so then he sets up to wait for someone to come try and remove the bugs, and catches the PI who.
I think one of the great things is that there aren't really any red herrings in this one. It's all kind of building.
Yeah, it does build.
There isn't like any sort of blind alley that it takes you down. There's nobody that he goes and talks to where it's not relevant at all.
Yeah, everything kind of is threaded together. The only like sort of fake out / red herring moment is when Culp has come back and Rizzo, the coach, comes into the box.
Right.
And there's you have a moment of thinking, oh, yeah, shit, he's not here.
But that's more, I mean, that's just more a dramatic suspense thing than, than like.
It's not a true red herring.
It's not a red herring. They don't, you know, there's no going to interview the, there's that scene, remember, where the, where Columbo interviews the woman who lives in the same apartment building. As,
right. And it's a complete,
it
like,
has nothing to do with anything. It's just a little character moment to like pad out the length of the film. This, this one is great because every single scene is important and every single moment leads towards.
Leads towards the reveal. Right. Yeah. Can we talk about the wonderful sequence of shots of Columbo in the empty stadium?
Like
working out. Oh, that's how like he ran down from there.
Yes. This is sort of to like, but it's also sort of to illustrate how far afield Columbo is. Because he's like, it's established in previous scenes that he's just been listening to the tapes nonstop.
Like over 100 times.
He's sort of going insane because he keeps listening to these phone recordings.
Right. Looking for something that proves.
Right. He's listening for something that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And ultimately,
what he says is,
I was looking in the wrong direction. I should have been looking for something that should have been there that wasn't. And that's the clock. That's the ultimate reveal. And it's a really smart reveal and it's really well done. And it's great in that, kind of after the reveal, there's no dialogue in it. You just, and it's mostly Robert Culp, like just shots of Robert Culp sort of realizing that he's been beaten.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like,
there's no witty exchange. There's no, well, you got me. There's none of that. It's just,
you just see the panic in his
face. And just the conviction on Columbo's.
Yeah.
And then credits roll. And I fucking love it.
It was really good. This is I would say one. I would put it up there with the premiere with the Jack I would put it up
Murder
there.
Murder by the Book.
Murder by the Book. Yeah, yeah. I'd put it up there with the Spielberg directed episode. Yeah. Like one of the, it's by far the tightest story.
Oh yeah.
Of all of the ones that we've watched.
Yeah, there was never a point in this one where I was like, oh. Where are we going? Or feeling the length of the
And it doesn't
episode.
Drag. Like, no, like I mean, I looked at my phone a little bit, but like...
Yeah, but you've seen it before.
I've seen it before. But there have been, you know, previous episodes where I was completely... like the Greenhouse one, this most previous one, I was completely checked out of it because I just... There weren't enough like really good performances or like there wasn't... it wasn't always sort of moving towards the end. And this one, because... all of the clues are there and there's sort of a logical thing and having seen it before and knowing like what the fatal flaw is. Cause I did remember that part, like hearing the clock at the beginning and going like, oh, they're laying
right.
it in. It's established. Like it is a very well crafted, well directed episode.
Yeah, it definitely, I'm with you having this compared to the Greenhouse episode, like as much as I enjoyed a lot of that, this is so much stronger.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're right. There's kind of nothing in it that is a waste.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, shot in the 70s, so it's not like it's going to be some rapid fire, quick cut pacing.
No,
it maintains
that sort of slow, methodical pacing of Columbo. Because I say Columbo as a series is very methodical about things. It sort of is in pace with the man himself, who is not a rapid fire action.
Right.
He doesn't have a service revolver. Like he's supposed to have one, but he probably like has never checked it out of the armory or whatever.
Yeah. Either he's never checked it out or it's rusted into his glove box.
Right. It's sitting in his desk at the police station and he's never taken it out.
It's so good. Okay. It's time to talk about fashion again.
Okay. The meter is flashing red, so you know what that time. You know what it means.
Overflow. It's just a couple of... It's two different things. First, it's the... you got to see the travel agent outfits.
Yes.
Columbo goes to the travel agent to check on the trip to Montreal.
This guy. So he's got a, it's
they
like
both do. There are two agents there.
Oh, but they're wearing completely different kinds of things. So it's not a uniform, is it?
No, it's a uniform.
Are they
they're
wearing
the same thing?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so it's like a gray wool maybe outfit that's like pseudo military.
It's
style.
Kind of, it's like a bellhop.
Yeah.
But it has a Nehru collar.
It looks like it, yeah.
It has
button down. So it has epaulettes, but here's the thing. So it's like a gray wool, and then the collar, the cuffs, and the epaulettes are all contrast green.
Right.
And they look like they, I can't identify the fabric because we never really get a close up, but it's just, it's so odd.
Yeah. And they've also, I mean, also brass button, like pin downs on the, what do you call it? The
epaulettes or
the collar.
Oh yeah, the collar and like the lapel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are very odd. But the real thing that I wanted to get to was Eve Babcock's calling for the evening.
Oh,
mistakes Columbo.
There's a really great scene where she thinks Columbo is her, you know, 2 o'clock or whatever.
Right, her appointment.
This guy coming in to do what they're going to do.
Go to dinner
and then
have some drinks and have a great time.
Have a good time. Columbo is not, and he picks up on it pretty quickly.
Right.
This is something where you might expect Columbo to kind of take a minute and sort of be befuddled, but he's on top of, he knows what's going on almost immediately.
Yeah, it seems like he goes befuddled mostly when that seems like it's going to work on someone.
Right.
And
but he instantly knows what's going on and is, it's a great moment because Peter Falk, he plays it so happy. It's like, this is the, Columbo is so just, he's just overjoyed to be involved and to know something that someone else doesn't.
Yeah.
And to sort of have this thing. So yes, the actual person whose appointment Columbo has crashed shows up.
Mm-hmm. And that's the jacket I want to talk about.
This is the thing we're going to talk about. And I understand why you want to.
Yep. Well, because it's just, it's just a multi-stripe sport coat. But it is
Do the stripes, am I thinking correctly, but do the stripes not go all the way up? Do they stop or do they?
No, I'm pretty sure they go all the way. I think that they might change a little in intensity
on the seaming or something.
But it's very, I saw it and I immediately thought, you could pass that as some vintage Paul Smith shit.
Hmm.
And it's really, it's actually a really great jacket. I'm super into that.
Like that jacket?
Yeah, I do.
What I expected you to say.
I also I got a soft spot for Paul Smith. That's true. That's one of his signature things is that kind of multi-stripe.
Well, and you do tend to prefer a kind of eccentric look, I think, a little bit. Something that is you know what I mean? Something that's a little more
that's a huge understatement, Mac.
Yes.
I am super into eccentric shit.
That's true.
Of course.
I was trying to be nice.
No, it's
but
fine.
No, you do. You
listen,
like to wear weird.
No,
you like to wear weird shit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I also like to wear comfortable shit.
Right.
But anyway,
but when you get fancy, you like to get fancy in a non-standard way. You don't like to just wear the suit, sport coat, and tie. Though I've seen you do that, and you rock it. Obviously.
I also enjoy that. All right. Well, we're just gonna. I'll keep this brief, but it's just the thing of typically what happens when you kind of fall down the rabbit hole of getting into menswear is you start with kind of conservative menswear, and I mean in that kind of Anglo, North American, Ivy League shit, all of that.
Very nice suits.
Yeah. Basically. So because there are pretty clear rules for the most part, and it's easy to start to make sense of those rather than just kind of staring into the abyss
of high fashion.
So as you get comfortable with that, it's easier to start kind of branching into other stuff street style and things where there's more play with silhouettes and there's more play with fit and you get weirder things that are inspired by workwear and that are inspired by different cultures kind of mixing together.
Sure.
And
I know that you personally wear a lot of sort of Japanese inspired stuff.
Yeah. I definitely wear a lot of stuff that is from Japanese designers and things like that.
Yeah.
And Japanese companies because they they tend to take interesting spins on workwear.
And also they have like a very trim cut usually. And you are a very slim fellow.
Thanks.
I mean that in the nice way. I mean that in the complimentary. You're a tall person.
Yeah, I'm just being uncomfortable with compliments.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
I know. This is the uncomfortable compliment hour with with Mac and Ben.
Anyway, so that's typically kind of how that winds up. If you stay kind of getting into clothes and stuff, you migrate towards the kind of freer expression because you get more comfortable with it and you get more, and that's that's just an indicator of how far down that rabbit hole I've fallen.
Is that you would wear this, what I would term a clown outfit, an outfit for a formal clown on the town,
right?
Just Bozo's big day.
And it definitely does, it's definitely intended to sort of look like, look at this bald guy's dude.
Meant to look like an idiot. He's here to,
because he's also squeezed into it like a sausage casing.
It is not a good suit for him, for this particular person.
It doesn't fit him well. Is what I'm saying. But it's used to that intent, but
Valerie Harper's evening entertaining gown though is pretty great.
It's like the what is it, like the
gauzy
the gauzy kind of translucent sleeves, you know, it's sort of like a puffed cap,
like
on
a midnight blue sort of color to it.
It definitely doesn't just communicate like sex work, it communicates her apartment does too.
It's very clearly a classy person, person who,
a person of refined tastes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's that Columbo is sort of all about the sort of rich and famous and the people who go around them.
I wrote a thing down about this scene.
It's
not about the clothing.
Sure.
Because I have to address it. Because it's a thing that Columbo says to her when he's talking to her. Because it's about the job and the secretary and all. And he goes, "You'd be an ornament in any office." And I immediately just went,
bleh. Yeah, 1970s.
No, it's not great. Like, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, you know, because I like Columbo. But also, like, man, that's so gross. I wish.
Yeah, it's not
and
great.
And there's a couple times where he talks about his wife nagging him that have those sort of, like, tropey things I don't like. But we do know that she's into bowling, and that's exciting to learn about Mrs.
We learn
Columbo.
About her. We also learned that they have a kid, maybe?
Maybe. Well, we learned that she has very strong opinions about the ice cream truck.
About the ice cream man, because the ice cream man spoils the child's dinner. But he doesn't, at no point does he say, you know, my son or my daughter or anything like that.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's actually that or so much as she has strong opinions
about. References in other things to, you know, kids, them having kids, but, you know, as with all things Mrs. Columbo, who knows?
I don't know if there's really any other big ticket things. There's some funny bits with Columbo because he steps in the pool by accident and ruins a shoe,
which is how he sort of notices the water on the deck, which is not the water on the deck that
tastes different than the water in the pool.
He washes away both. The murderer Robert Culp has washed away his shoe prints, and that water is fresh water, and the water in the pool is pool water,
which is to say chlorinated.
He can taste the difference between the two.
Yeah, and chlorine's pretty noticeably different than fresh
water. And so when they say, "Oh, water splashed on the deck over here," and he says, "Why was there, you know, there was the water wasn't splashed on the deck. Someone hosed this down."
Was there a gardener? Yeah. And then, obviously there was no gardener.
There wasn't any gardener because everyone had been
Because
dismissed.
Robert Culp was the gardener of death.
Okay, sure.
We
can go that route. That's fine.
It happened.
Yeah. He murdered him.
Let's not make a big deal out of it.
It's just
another murder.
Just another one. It's our 12th.
That's a lot of murders.
That's a lot of murders. Yeah.
Technically, would it be our 13th? Because there's two.
No, this would be the 12th episode.
No, but I mean, there were two murders in the.
This is our 12th case.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's not
fair
get
enough.
Too fucking technical, dude. Please.
All right.
I don't need the corrections. Thank you, Twitter.
Okay.
I think this is a really great episode. You know, Murder by the Book, I think probably
that's the one with the second murder.
Still my favorite though. I would say Murder by the Book probably still my favorite.
No, I
but
totally
this
understand.
One is 100% second place.
They are top contenders. Yeah.
Top two for sure.
Yeah. Do we get to see more Robert Culp?
Yes. He'll be
Fuck
back.
Yeah.
He'll be back for two more episodes. He'll be a murderer once and then when it goes into the 80s, into the bad, the 80s and 90s, the really bad run, he'll be in an episode.
Okay.
But it's okay. We are years away from that at the pace we are currently going, so don't worry about that.
I mean, one day, but yeah.
I think that's going to do it for this episode of Columboys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I've forgotten. How does our podcast work? My brain is completely shut down.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know what happened to you. We're doing this like we normally do, and you've broken it, Matt.
I'm in a good mood today. It's weird. I don't know what's happened. I honestly feel broken in that I'm happy. I'm sorry. I can't explain it. I can only apologize.
Mac, it's okay. I forgive you. Just
thank you.
Don't let it happen again.
Don't worry.
That's terrible advice. I'm glad you are happy, even if that means we have a really weird bit of filler in this podcast.
Well,
don't think about that.
This has been Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And one more thing.
Yeah?
I didn't think of a one more thing this time.
That's okay. That's okay.
All right.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter @MacJ and @DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.
I think that's the second time we've done that.
Maybe.
Is that okay?
That's fine.
All right. It'll be fine. It's our fucking podcast. It's if someone's mad about it, they can return the unused part for a full refund.
Oh, wait. Spoiler alert. The podcast is free.
Podcast is free, motherfucker.
It's free.